This podcast replay is brought to you by KSDT CPA, one of South Florida's largest and one of the country's fastest growing accounting firms. KSDT CPA is a full service firm that also excels in crypto. Visit them at KSDTCPA.com or call 305-670-3370.
Oh, yeah. There he is. How you feeling?
What's up,
baby?
Bo? How you feeling, baby?
Good, man. Can't complain. It's Friday, man. Get to relax. Although we are debuting our crypto show tomorrow at 1 o'clock, okay. So I am going to do a little work.
Okay.
We're gonna start. You should watch it. We're going to do introductory stuff.
The market is so bad this year. I need whatever tips I can get on what's turning things around.
Learn about crypto, hey, man. In a couple of years, when it takes over all over the place, you're going to go, I should have listened to that crazy son of a bitch. And you're going to regret it, but, you know, that's all right. That's all right. But
I'm listening. I'm watching. I will say I think I started listening at the wrong time. I started listening about 6 months ago.
Well, in the middle of the bear market, yeah. But little did you know that was the time to invest. The last 14 months have been a buying zone. Now, see, the thing about investing is that, and anybody will tell you this, you're going to go buy a property somewhere and you're done. Well, you maybe want to go to a place that maybe it's a neighborhood that might be a little bit run down a little bit because you might get a better deal. Or you're also anticipating that it's a neighborhood that is now being, you know, what is it, gentrified or whatever? What's that called or whatever,
yeah,
you know?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're kind of, and you're kind of foreseeing it, saying, you know, if we buy a property now, we're saving money. And yeah, but look, in a couple of years, that area is moving all the way here. And then, all you know, Midtown, like a lot of people probably invested in Midtown in times when Midtown was like not a great area. Now what's Midtown? Now you want to live in Midtown, hang out in Midtown, go to Midtown. It is the area, such a place.
So you mentioned Midtown. Obviously, that whole area, Midtown, Wynwood. When I first moved down here, I moved to Edgewater. And Edgewater was just starting building up. This was like 5 years ago. And exactly. The condo that I was renting there now literally goes for double the rent from 5 years ago. That area I know is blossoming. And so, yeah, you're right. Wish I would have had the money to buy at that time and that place. I would have made a boatload of money. But, you know,
there's still some values right now that are going on. I still think Bitcoin is a terrific value at $23,000. But Tesla, we were talking about it on the show here, it was down to $109, $106.
Yeah.
And I was saying, you know, you don't know where the bottom is, but this is a value now. I was like, wow, man, if it gets to 100, I was like, maybe I'll start getting a Tesla. You know where Tesla is right now? $176.
So it's almost double, you know, 75% up. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So you look at it and you go, let me see here, a month. This thing was at $107. Let me see. Does it give me the date here? January 3rd. January 3rd. We're in the 27th.
Yeah. In less than a month.
In less than a month.
Yeah.
And I could do that with several cryptos that a month ago, 2 months ago, they were, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50% down. And now they're up all of that. But that's kind of the thing about investing, Cam, is you have to invest when it's the worst time.
Yeah.
And whether it's property, whether it's crypto, whether it's stocks, it doesn't matter. It's the time when shit is hitting the fan. Right. And like, what am I going to invest?
The old saying is you buy when everyone's fearful and you sell when everyone's happy. Right. You know,
right. When there's blood on the streets is when you buy, and there was blood on the streets, and we're kind of getting out of that now, but that's kind of the tricky part of it. And you got to have, you know, strong hands and be not listen to all the FUD, like we call fear, uncertainty, and doubt, that you'll have plenty of people throwing that out there all the time. Right. We deal with it with Tua, right? There's that fear, uncertainty, and doubt all the time with Tua. So it's crazy stuff. By the way, did you think Sean Payton was going to have this hard of a time finding a home?
Oh, sorry. I think I mentioned this when we last did our chat. Was today, Friday, Tuesday, that don't be surprised if Sean Payton goes back to TV. And I didn't know that it was going to be like that. But I did say that because I remembered hearing some buzz that for whatever reason, I didn't know that it was, they didn't just like them. But I knew that there was some buzz from people I was talking to that there's not as many people lined up in the Sean Payton train as we had been led to believe. And so I am not surprised. That being said, I'm surprised that it's been for the reasons that have been listed. You know, some people just not feeling like he's impressed them in interviews, given how much power he wants, and really just kind of, you know, Carolina choosing Frank Wright over him, essentially. So, you know, those things are a part of it. I mean, when you go for Sean Payton, you know that everything that encompasses it, you got to deal with, he's going to have a big ego. He's going to want a lot of power. You got to be willing to do that. You're going to have a general manager who is willing to take a back seat or not have a general manager at all and let Sean Payton run it. Second, you're going to have to give up heavy draft capital to the Saints to go get that guy. And third, you're going to have to compensate him maybe as the highest paid coach in football, if not one of the top two or three. And so you've got to be willing to do all that. And at some point, you're like, is it really worth this? Like, is it? Are we guaranteeing ourselves a Super Bowl here? Probably not. And so I think, you know, you're looking at some teams drop off the radar for him. I think he's still in the mix in Arizona. We'll see what they do. That team's a little bit of an unknown. But it seems like for the rest of the teams, they've all kind of moved forward beyond Sean Payton at this stage.
Yeah, no, it definitely looks like that. On the flip side, what does Steve Wilks have to do?
I don't know, man. To do it,
he's
got to do backflips, I guess, yeah, right?
He took a 1-4 team, 6-6.
Nearly won the South.
I know. And look, man, I got nothing against Frank Reich. I think he knows quarterbacks, and I understand all of that. But, you know, it was a disaster in Arizona when they let him go. And it was unfair because it was one season. We saw it here with Cam Cameron, one disaster. Okay. But that wasn't the case when he took over. That team was, bro, that team was in bad shape with Matt Rhule. And then he took over and did a really good job. And it's really a shame that he loses the opportunity there. And, you know, I would love to say, because somebody goes to me, well, wait a minute, bro. Well, they can't be looked at that way. They had Ron Rivera. And I said, well, that was a completely different owner. That wasn't David Tepper. You know, that was a different owner that had a minority in Ron Rivera there for many, many years in Richardson. Now it's Tepper that is making this decision. Now, again, you're not going to stop these owners from hiring whoever the hell they want to hire. I get all of that. But, you know, the Steve Wilks situation, we got a lot to defend on this go around. Arizona, we didn't have a lot to stand on because it was a terrible year. But to go 6-6 after they were 1-4 and they really didn't have a quarterback and that whole mess, dude. I Sam Darnold played actually decent football down the stretch, you know, for them. I don't know, man. I kind of feel bad for the guy that he's not getting a fair shake, dude.
No, you're absolutely right. And talking to people throughout the league over the last 18 hours, that's been the conversation. Like, Steve Wilks deserved his job, you know. The owner, David Tepper, mentioned back in October that if Steve Wilks does an incredible job, then we'll consider him as a head coach. First of all, what kind of parameter is that? You've got a situation where the Panthers are 1-4, like you mentioned, with Matt Rhule. They trade away their best player in Christian McCaffrey after a week, and he still leads them and turns his team around 6-6 with a chance to win the South. If that's not incredible, I don't know what it is. That's a tough parameter to even do. Second, he actually did it. And third, I don't know how much of a true shot he even had. I mean, you look at their interview process, 7 of the 9 coaches they interviewed were on the offensive side of the ball. It seemed pretty set to me that they had their mind on getting an offensive-minded coach to fix the quarterback. And, you know, that's their prerogative. But in the same elk, don't come out and say you gave Steve Wilks a true shot when you've got players like Derek Brown and Brian Burns and guys who are key core parts of your franchise vouching on national TV saying we need Steve Wilks to be our guy, and you essentially ignore them and pick your guy. You know, I think that, you know, if they want to make their choice, they have every right to do so. But it didn't seem like Steve Wilks could have done anything more to get this job. Maybe the decision was already made.
Listen, the guy in Baltimore is, you know, a special teams coach.
Right.
And he's found a way to have a great organization, and he's had, you know, he's lost offensive coordinators, like the one that just stepped down now, but he's replaced them with another one and another one. And, you know, that to me, did you give Steve Wilkes an opportunity at least to show you that he could get an offensive coach? And by the way, didn't they play their best offensive football after your offensive coach, Matt Rhule, left?
They were in the top five in rushing without Christian McCaffrey. The combination of Deontay Foreman and Chuba Hubbard had a top five rushing offense. The Dolphins have had 17 running backs in the last 5 years and haven't sniffed the top five rushing offense.
Wasn't Matt Rhule an offensive coach?
Yes. Matt Rhule's an offensive coach. And here's my thing. We obsess on offense and defense. There's been a wave. It all started before him. But the Sean McVay era has started everybody looking for their young offensive mind that's going to save this franchise, going to find a quarterback. And this is another example of that. And I get it. Owners obsess on offense. They watch TV on the broadcast on Sundays, and they see all these offensive minds scoring 30 points, and we got to get that guy. We got to get that guy. We got to get his second in command. But the reality is you need to find a leader. The leader is who leads your franchise, and you trust him to hire the coaches to run the offense. That's the way this thing should go. And you mentioned Steve Wilkes in Arizona. You got to remember, he wasn't the only issue there in his 1 year. You had Josh Rosen at quarterback. And so regardless of whoever your offensive mind is, we know the quarterback is always the quarterback. If you get the quarterback right, the rest of it starts to take care of itself. I mean, Frank Reich just coming from Indy. By the way, I think Frank Reich's a good coach, and I think that he's going to be fine.
No, I have no problem.
This is nothing against Frank Reich. But the reality is Frank Reich was in Indianapolis for 4.5 years. He had Andrew Luck for a brief time. He had Phillip Rivers, and he had Matt Ryan. And he went just above 500, and he got fired. And so, you know, these are three. I know the two at the end were on the latter parts of their career. But still, I mean – he's had some quarterbacks here, and it hasn't been like, voila, you know, everything's fixed. So I think the assumption is.
And by the way, he gave bad advice to his own franchise on what quarterbacks to bring in to actually fix. That's why this offensive bullshit doesn't fly with me, because you had your offensive coach in Matt Rhule, and then your defensive coach took over, but yet your offense got better overall. So, you know, what do you want him to do? And he ended up using the other quarterback, not the guy that you guys ended up trading for. You know what I mean? It's like that to me. And by the way, isn't the guy for Philadelphia, Sirianni, a former defensive coach?
Sirianni's, I think, always been on the offensive side.
Well, he's offense.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he's an offensive guy. He's definitely an offensive guy. I'm not sure if he had a year or so on defense, but he's always been an offensive guy.
Maybe I was wrong on that one, but yeah. I'm sure. I'm trying to think of some other defensive coordinator or defensive-minded head coaches that they've done a good job with their offensive, you know.
Mike Tomlin's obviously a defensive guy who's been doing it for a very, very long period of time. Sean McDermott, I know a lot of Dolphins fans don't want to hear it, but Sean McDermott is a defensive-minded coach. He's been doing a really good job there for a long period of time as well. I mean, there's been a lot of defensive coaches who have had success in this league. So it's not just an offensive league. I think the idea that it's just offense is just some made-up – maybe it's media. Maybe we in the media – are buying into it. But defensive coaches.
You and I aren't, and we're in the media, so we don't follow for that.
No, defensive coaches, just as much as offensive coaches, can run and succeed in this league. And it's about the leadership.
The skill of a head coach is like a CEO or a general manager in a business.
Yep.
And you're going to lose regional managers, and you're going to lose top salespeople, and you're going to lose top people in your shipping department and top people in your inventory and all, and then you've got to replace them, and you've got to find the people that are as good or better in that spot. And that's kind of what I had. And to me, that's what I need to know as an owner. Okay, what, like right now, you've got an offensive minded coach in Mike McDaniel. Dude, if he lands Vic Fangio,
right?
Like, holy shit, this guy knows how to build an offensive staff and can go get his own defensive coordinator. That is strong.
Right. Okay. And that's why like staff decisions are such a huge part of the interview process that people don't realize. People wonder like, hey, why isn't this coach getting hired? This coach, so a lot of it's relationships. You know, we talk about like not to go back. We talk about Brian Flores there. And, you know, we've talked about this a bunch. But one of the things that Brian failed at on the field was his inability to find the right offensive coordinator. I don't think anybody would disagree that he was a very strong
staff, dude. It wasn't just OC. He couldn't get a QB.
It was the offensive staff. Yes. Yeah. And so I don't think anybody would disagree that he's a really good defensive coach. And the defense played well against him. But you can't just have one side of the ball fixed. You've got to have the whole culture of the organization in good place. And then, you know, you got to be able to hire. If you're going to run one side of the ball, and that's why people obsess with the offense, because your offensive coach, in theory, is going to be your head coach who runs things like Mike McDaniel, but also runs the offense. And so you have the organization fits and you have the offense fix, and then you just have to worry about the defense. That's in theory why people focus on the offensive-minded head coaches. The problem is it's not just so easy to fix a defense. You know, as we're seeing in Miami, now they got to go find it because their plan of, oh, let's keep everything the same and we'll just fix the offense and we'll be good. Defense is good. Let's just keep it. It doesn't work that way. It doesn't work. That drop off between Flores and Boyer was very clear. And now they've got to go out and get a guy, Vic Fangio or somebody else, to go fix it. You're going to have to do the same thing on the offensive side of the ball. And so to me, it really doesn't matter who your coach is on what side of the ball. You got to be able to have a guy who has the relationships to find coaches and to replace them if they eventually leave or don't have success.
All right, let's throw in all the ingredients in here, and then you tell me what we're cooking in here. So we're finding out that Sean Payton's having trouble getting a job like the way he wants. So in turn, a lot of people have talked about Fangio's tied to him. So if Sean's not getting his job and getting back to TV, no. So then we also hear that Philadelphia, their defensive coordinator, could be the lead dog for Houston, just as former Houston linebacker D'Amico Ryans is the lead dog for Denver, right? According from what we hear. Fangio could be, since he's a consultant in Philadelphia, could end up taking the job and taking over there as defensive coordinator. Word is Miami can't hire him until Philadelphia's done with the season, if they can hire him. Then we've got this other mix. We had our boy Benjamin Albright on yesterday. You know Benjamin from KOA in Colorado and knows his shit. Absolutely. And so I reached out to him because I know he can give us a lot of insight on Fangio. And he gave us a really interesting nugget. The mom is here in Florida. Mm-hmm. Obviously, she's in her older years. His girlfriend, who's a surgeon, is in California. And so we don't know, is he going to take a job on the East Coast to be closer to mom? Will he take a job on the West Coast instead? Will he go with Peyton if he's really finds a job? Does he stay in Philadelphia? Does he come to Miami? What have you heard? Because from what I'm hearing, okay, if the Peyton thing dies out, I kind of feel that Philadelphia is the second option because, my God, it's a Super Bowl ready-made team. The guy leaves. He knows the defense already because he's been consulting and all that stuff. So why not step in there to a ready-made team and, you know, stability? Or I think Miami's kind of third when I start to look at that landscape that I put myself in his shoes is what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. I'm not putting myself in the fan's shoes because obviously we want to come here. Right. So all of these elements have been thrown into the cooking pot. What comes out?
Well, here's what I would say, first of all, and I reported this, but, you know, Mike McDaniel has wanted or admired Vic Fangio and his scheme for a year now, you know, since since when he got the job, essentially. I reported throughout the process the Dolphins had made clear to all their candidates, that they were going to have to keep the defensive coordinator and a lot of the defensive staff. That was something that was made clear to the candidates. And so Mike essentially inherited Josh Boyer and a lot of his assistants, which is why we're seeing some of them exit now that Mike McDaniel is able to have a bigger say in what's going on here. And so I think if it was up to the Dolphins, my view, based on what I'm hearing, they would sign Vic Fangio and make it done. But it's not only up to them. And so the Vic Fangio element is interesting because, like you mentioned, He has been a consultant in Philadelphia this year. I don't know if that was readily known until about a week ago, but he has been there. That being said, he's just a consultant. He doesn't have a coaching full-time role. And so he doesn't need to get permission or leave at any point. But that being said, he's probably going to want to see this playoff run through. And at the same token, we could see, you know, if for whatever reason Philly's season ends on Sunday, then all of a sudden Houston could make a move. Denver can make a move for their or 49ers, vice versa, for their preferred candidate. If it is D'Amico Ryans in Denver and it is Jonathan Gannon in Houston, then those are situations that we'll have more clarity with after this weekend. And so maybe it's Monday, Tuesday when we start to see some of these buckets drop on if those two guys do leave, then you have two of your NFC championship teams contenders open defensive coordinators. You got Kyle Shanahan and Nick Sirianni there, who are the offensive minds we're talking about, and Mike McDaniel. And so you've got three really good offensive minds competing for one guy, essentially. And then, like you said, it's going to be up to what Vic wants. I don't know. I don't have, like, any idea what Vic's preference is at this point. You mentioned some of the family elements there. I didn't know about the San Fran element. I didn't know he had a relationship.
She's in Southern California.
Gotcha. Okay. I didn't know about the Cali element. I didn't know about the Florida element. And I did know that he's from the Pennsylvania area. And so he does have family up there. That's where his roots are. And so it's easy for him to stay where he, you know, like any of us, like if, like, you know, somebody offers you an opportunity where your hometown is, you're like, great, you know, I'll stay at the crib. And so a lot of good choices for him. I know he also interviewed in Atlanta and in Carolina as well. And so he does not have a limit of options, which is why I think the Dolphins have to prep themselves for if for whatever reason he doesn't come. Who's your second choice? Is it Sean Desai, who was a Vangio disciple and was a DC with the Bears before? Do you go over to Chris Richard, who has been around the league, has had some success in Seattle and Dallas?
Who's your pick?
I don't know, man. I honestly don't know a lot about what the type of scheme Chris Richard would want to run. He's been in a lot of different places, but I don't know what his scheme truly would be. I would want somebody that I could leave the defense alone with and trust that they have. Because as we know, Mike McDaniel, although he's the head coach and CEO of the team, he would prefer to run the offense, have somebody else be the head coach of the defense. And so I don't know a lot about Sean Desai as a person, but I do know that his scheme is something that's a Vangio scheme. And so if Mike McDaniel is looking for that scheme and you can't get Vangio, the second best would be get the guy he taught the scheme, you know? And so to me, Campanelli is a really good coach. I think he does deserve a DC job. I just think that if you're looking at what Miami is heading towards, I think they have a vision of what they want the defense to look like. And maybe staying internal may not be the choice this time. But, you know, we'll see.
All right. Predictions. We got San Francisco, Philadelphia. Philly's favored by 2.5. What do you think?
Philly, San Fran. I think that Philly has been the best team in football all year. And I think they are the better team on Sunday. I think they're better on the offensive line. I think their defensive line leads the NFL in the sacks by 15. And I think they get to Brock Purdy and make the rookie look like a rookie for maybe the first time all season. I got Philly by double digits.
Yeah, I got Philly too. I'm taking them also. Cincinnati at Kansas City. And right now, Kansas City is now favored by 1.5 after Mahomes put on an ankle show.
Yeah, man. I can't wait for this game. Like, I think the Philly San Fran game is going to be fun. But the Cincy KC game, it had a little spiciness. I was at the last game they played in December. And in the locker room after the game, Mike Hilton was really like almost yelling in my ear, talking about, you know, they've been talking all week, but we're 3-0 against them in the calendar year. That's all you need to know. We're 3-0 against them in the calendar year, and we're going to see them again in the playoffs. And they know when we see them, they got to play us. And so that was his message there. I see some Chiefs players this week. Willie Gay, the linebacker, they asked him what he fears or what he's impressed about the Bengals defense, and he said nothing, or Bengals offense, and he said nothing. So there's been a little spiciness there. You know how much I love Patrick Mahomes. I called him the most underrated player in the league. But since he's been the best team I've covered this season, I haven't covered Philly this year, But since he's been the best team that I've covered, and I think they'll be the better team on Sunday. So give me Cincy in a really close one.
By the way, for those of you that don't know what he's talking about.
I'm just excited to be playing football, man. That's the just what comes with the game. You know, we, like Coach Reed said, we don't do no talking. We just go have a business when it's time to go.
What is it about that Bengals offense that maybe impresses you the most? You played it a few times?
Nothing.
Okay.
Nothing.
The Bengals offense has scored 27 points against them a month ago. Joe Burrow, nothing. Jamar Chase, nothing.
They got that swag, bro. It's
nothing.
They got that swag.
Hey, man, I can't wait. I can't wait. And I don't know for sure, but I've got a very good suspicion. If the Bengals do win and they get Joe Burrow or Jamar Chase or one of those guys in a post-game interview after, one of their answers is going to be nothing.
Right. Yeah. Or there's going to be a shirt made that everybody's going to be wearing that says nothing.
This is a Bengals team that hears everything. They ran through the tunnel after they beat the Bills and yell, you better get those refunds. Refunds.
I was explaining to the young one, Marcel, because we tend to have this generational gap with Marcel at times on the show. And he's like, oh, I don't know why these Bengal fans were all butthurt about the AFC champion. And I'm like, bro, you're young. You really don't get it. Bengals fans have been tortured forever. Bengal players that go through there are tortured the same way. They right. get no respect. They get treated like Rodney Dangerfield all the time. Now that they've earned the right to be one of the best teams in the league, and they were going to beat the shit out of Buffalo a couple of weeks ago, like they did last week, because they knew they were better. They knew they had the swag. They knew they had them. And they felt like they maybe were on the brink of, hey, if Kansas City slips up, we own home field advantage. And after all these years of being crapped on as a fan base because of your own or because of whatever, now you've earned the right to be at home for an AFC championship game and you're going to take it away from us? Dude, I completely understand as a battered Dolphins fan. I can't imagine what it's like to be a battered Bengals fan or Lions fan or whatever, bro. And the Lions, if they actually build on this success, brother, you got to understand that these fan bases have been suffering for a while. So you gotta have some sympathy for the way, like, everybody else got home field advantage for AFC championship games. Why shouldn't we? And right. I totally understand that from Cincinnati's side.
Yeah, they have been the small market who's been ignored for so long. And some of it's been warranted because they haven't been. Right. Now they have the team. Right. Now they have the quarterback. That's why the whole mantra, and Mike Hilton said it when he told me earlier, that whole they got to play us mantra, that's based on what you're talking about. The Bengals feeling slighted. They feel like people are not respecting them. They're not giving them the love. They were the AFC champions last year. And all last week we were talking about, oh, the Bills, Josh Allen, they're going to do this. They're going to do that. They're 6-point favorites. They shut them up. Now this week it's all about, oh, Patrick Mahomes is going to be a superhero coming back from the ankle injury. And he is a superhero. Don't get me wrong. Patrick Mahomes is a superhero. But all the talk is about that. And the Bengals are like, we beat them 3 times out of our last 3 chances in the last 13. What more? They got to play us.
Right.
So, yeah, I can't wait for Sunday. And I can't wait to see what the nothing is that Willie Gay doesn't see in the Bengals offense.
I'm with you there. All right. What do you got going on the NFL Network? Do they have you traveling?
They don't have me traveling this weekend, so I won't be at a game, unfortunately, but I will be Monday heading to Vegas for the Pro Bowl. So I'm prepping for Pro Bowl, so I'll watch the games at home on Sunday and then go to Pro Bowl, and I'll be in Vegas all week for that.
All right, you got it. We'll talk next week. You'll be in Vegas. I'll be in Mobile. We'll have some fun, my brother. I appreciate you. Absolutely. As always. Have a great weekend and be safe in your travels, too.
For sure. You too, man.
You got it. All right. Thank you. There you go. Cam Wolf, baby. Don't forget KSDT, 3 offices in Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach counties, 305-670-3370. Forensic accounting, business valuation. They do it all there. from commercial litigation, divorce, fraud, anything that your business is dealing with, they can help you out. Management advisory services, from forecast to projections to budgets, they can really help your business grow. Call the great people at KSDT CPAs. They can handle your personal accounting. They can handle your business accounting, folks. They've got healthcare advisory, property management, wealth management there, whether it's family office, business owned planning, insurance strategies. They do valuation. They do domestic and international tax. They do assurance. They do it all, man. And they are in the top 200 in accounting firms by Forbes. So you want a top 200 accounting or tax firm, you got it right here in South Florida, Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach counties. We got an office coming in North Carolina soon for our friends up in North Carolina. 305-670-3370. You tell them that Big O sent you.